When a crime is committed, it is expected that a punishment will follow. Even if that crime is an unintentional act or a mistake, the belief is that it should still result in a price for the person who commits it. When former NYPD officer Peter Lang was convicted by a jury of manslaughter for the shooting death of an unarmed man, most thought that the system was working as it needed to. When it came time for sentencing, the story turned out to be quite different. Here to discuss this case and the ongoing aftermath is Assistant Counsel for the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund, Angel Harris. Good morning, Angel.
Good morning.
And the website for the NAACP Legal Defense Education Fund, it's NAACPLDF.org. Of course, we have the link over to our website. Find out more about their organization, the issues that they pay attention to and bring you the information about. Just to catch the listener up who might be on the outskirts of the story, give us the details. As I mentioned, former officer Peter Lang was convicted of the manslaughter, goes before the judge for sentencing, and pick the story up from that point, because he was looking at, by expectations, up to 15 years in prison.
Yes, that's correct. So during the trial, Mr. Liang, he faced a long list of charges, but he was tried and convicted of manslaughter and official misconduct, which he would have faced up to 15 years in prison. The judge in that case reduced his sentence, or actually reduced his charge, to criminally negligent homicide and sentenced Mr. Liang to 5 years of probation and 800 hours of community service. And a lot of folks sort of wonder how this could happen, or, you know, how can a judge change the charge? And there are various ways that can happen, but one of the things that the judge put on the record, he said that he found that given the defendant's background and given how remorseful he was, that he thought it wasn't necessary to incarcerate him, that would be a just sentence for him. And that's why he decided to do the 5 years of probation and 800 hours of community service. And one of the things that's sort of troubling to LDF and to lots of people in the community is sort of the glaring example of unequal standards of accountability to which officers and citizens are held in the criminal justice system. You very rarely, if ever, have a judge who will say, oh, this defendant has been, you know, overcharged or overconvicted in a case and to reduce that charge and to not give them jail time. So it sort of takes away a perception of fairness in the criminal justice system. And I think that's really what's bothering folks in this case. You know, there was a life that was lost. So not only that injustice, but to see sort of the stark difference in how everyday citizens are treated in the criminal justice system and how police officers are sort of given a special treatment is sort of what we're looking at here. And just to give you a little background of sort of what happened in the case, Officer Liang was patrolling the pink houses, and he was in a stairwell, and that's when he shot Mr. Gurley in the dark stairwell. So you have an officer who is patrolling homes. He's in people's home environments with a gun drawn, you know, and obviously finger poised on the trigger enough for him to be able to shoot. So that definitely brings a lot of concerns when you think about how officers are patrolling people's homes and just how they're interacting with the communities, you know, that they are held responsible for serving and protecting.
What's an element too a lot of people talk about as far as the, and this is something we've seen equally, maybe even more so with Chicago too, where there's a disconnect between the police and the community, and the call is for the police to integrate themselves more with more understanding in the community, but then someone can counter that argument with the don't snitch attitude that's too many in primarily the black communities have too. It seems to be where don't both sides have to have at least some give toward the middle?
I agree. I think that police officers should create positive and collaborative relationships with the community. And also, you know, the police officers have a role to play. But I do think when you're talking about patrolling neighborhoods and particular in patrolling housing environments, there should be a sense of community the officers should know the residents and the residents should know the officers. If you think about in the 90s, public housing sort of patrols were very different. There were officers who were specifically assigned to those units, and people knew those officers, and it was more of a community than someone coming in to a hostile environment. And I think there are lots of ways that those situations can be de-escalated. One of those things being sort of overcoming, you know, racial bias and stereotypes. In assuming automatically that a public housing building or resident will be inherently dangerous. That's something that we have to step away from. That is not true. While there are incidences in public housing environments, they are not all dangerous. People live there. People raise their kids there. Generations of people have been raised in public housing. And so we sort of have to step away from that attitude. An officer can't come into the environment automatically thinking that he's in a battleground. He's in a home environment. This is where people live and raise their children.
So with Angel Harris, who is the Assistant Counsel for the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund, NAACPLDF.org is their website. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. Given the fact, as you said, that Officer Liang had his weapon drawn, obviously, I mean, you could debate whether he's approaching it as the hunter or feeling as the hunted because of the assumption of the environment, I guess we could fairly say. The shot that he fired because he was startled was an accidental shot that was not aimed directly at the victim. It ricocheted and created the victim. But having said that, as the fact, is this a call too for a revamping of the training? Because Liang was a relative rookie, and maybe, I mean, rookies obviously have to build up the experience in all aspects of police work, but putting someone in what is, like it or not, a presumed dangerous situation too soon is what creates situations like this versus if a veteran was in that situation.
I think this tragedy absolutely reinforces the need for adequate training with appropriate supervision and accountability measures. I think it's a mistake to have two relatively new officers patrolling together. That just sort of creates an environment that is, you know, sort of ripe with the possibility of things going wrong. So there absolutely needs to be greater emphasis on adequate training and de-escalation training so you can de-escalate potentially confrontational situations. Officers need to be trained in how to sort of approach a situation without having to have their gun drawn or, you know, not automatically going for their weapons. And there are trainings and there are ways to sort of create that environment in that situation so we won't have these issues happening. But I also think that there was something that was interesting in this case was that these officers weren't even taught the basic sort of urgent care needs, how to do CPR, or, you know, that was striking to me as well. So that's yet another thing that they can definitely improve upon. So de-escalation, basic urgent care, you know, dealing with implicit biases, adequate supervision and accountability are definitely things that need to be revamped.
If I recall the story correctly, Liang basically stood off to the side. It was his partner attempting incorrectly administering CPR.
Well, actually, there was a civilian who was administering CPR.
Okay.
The officers in no way attempted to.
And when you look, too, at the history, I mean, granted, you can look at total numbers of crimes, population, and do the cutting through percentages. But when you look at, you go back to the 80s and Nellie Rumpers, you go through the 90s with Ernest Seyon and Anthony Baez, Amadou Diallo, you move into the 21st century, and well, the future wasn't holding much for Patrick Dorisman or Sean Bell, now Akai Gurley. Mm-hmm. Not a large number, yeah, but a life is still a life. And that's, you know, when does someone say something is wrong here? And maybe the answer isn't as difficult as people make it sound or try to write it off as being and delaying arrival at that answer.
I mean, I think absolutely now is the time to say enough is enough. I also think that it's time to really start looking into the need for independent prosecutors and independent investigatory bodies. Because when you think about a prosecutor who needs to bring a case against police officers that they then have to have an ongoing relationship with after the case, that creates tension, and that makes it very difficult for the DA and police officers to continue a relationship if that's the body that will be prosecuting them. So it creates an unneeded tension. And I do think that if there was sort of a system of independent prosecutors or independent individuals doing the investigations, that you would have a more open and honest policy or more open and honest procedure. But I think it's really time to sort of take to task all of the police departments, you know, in how they're training officers and what officers are being taught during these trainings. But not only that, but held accountable for their actions. When there are, you know, violations in the police department, officers need to be held accountable for violating those things. And there also needs to be a recognition that there are systemic problems. And a lot of places have, you know, sort of begun task force and they've done federal investigations to sort of expose the problems in police departments. For example, Chicago has just come out with their task force report, and it talks about sort of the shortcomings of the Chicago Police Department and has various recommendations in how to change that. And among those recommendations are things that the mayor can do and citizens can do, because it really is a group effort. Yes, the police departments need to change, but there are also other bodies in the government that can help sort of push this change forward.
Going back to what you said, just to wrap things up with Angel Harris from the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund, this might sound oversimplistic, but maybe cut down on the riding patrols and put cops back on walking beats so that people in neighborhoods know the beat cop like Dad and Grandpa used to know.
I really think it's important for there to be a collaborative relationship between police officers and the community. But I think we need to make sure that when those officers are patrolling those neighborhoods, they aren't doing it in a hyper-vigilant manner. That, you know, there needs to be de-escalation, and they can't bring tension to the community. So I think that's going to be the key. And part of that is dealing with implicit bias, because when they're going into certain neighborhoods, not to sort of ramp up the aggression because they are in that particular neighborhood, or to become hyper-vigilant because they're in a particular neighborhood, because that can then be counterproductive.
She is the Assistant Counsel for the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund. They're on the web at NAACPLDF.org. Angel Harris, thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you for having me.